Everyone is talking about blobs and dog with hat. Just imagine, hey mom, yeah, I'm super busy because blobs just got introduced to Ethereum so I can finally make cheap transactions. And dog with hat is going parabolic, so I gotta decide if I should reallocate some capital. Like, what the F? Well, your mom might not know, but we do because we're your crypto homies, and every Friday we're here to help you separate the signal from the noise. Will dog with hat be the best performing cryptocurrency in this cycle? I don't know. You're going to have to listen to find out. GMGM, welcome to Web3 Academy, your one trusted source to capitalize on the next big phase of the internet. I'm Jay Bird, joined by my co-host Kyle Reedhead, and we believe that blobs are going to change the world. You're going to hear the word blobs a lot in this episode, which is quite odd, but for whatever reason is extremely important in today's episode and actually in just the blockchain world in general. So we're going to explain what blobs are and what's happening because it is now live on Ethereum, but there's a bunch of things happening on Ethereum. So the start of the show anyway, after the market watch, of course, is going to be a lot about all the things happening on Ethereum. Eigenlayer is going mainnet. EtherFi has some big announcements. They're launching something really cool. Of course, we're going to touch on Meme Coin Mania once again, as Jay has mentioned. Some unlocks. We'll talk about a big unlock happening in the L2 world. And then we'll sort of just dive into what unlocks mean, token unlocks, that is, for crypto. And just something you can be aware of as you're investing throughout the cycle. And then a bunch more. Telegram is going to IPO, but they also have a blockchain and a token. So like, how's that going to work? And Gary V maybe is going to bring the next big NFT project following the footsteps of Pudgy Penguins. We'll talk all about that and so much more here in today's episode. Before we jump in, as always, we have a poll question every week. This week's poll question is we want to know if you've noticed the impact of blobs. If you don't know what blobs are, you're going to have to keep listening to find out. But have you seen a drop in fees on your L2 transactions? We want to know how you are feeling about that. So answer the poll question on Spotify or in YouTube comments, wherever you are listening. At the same time, you want to give us a like or a follow or a review. We would greatly appreciate that. Helps us get more people into the space. Let's go into the market watch. Kai, first up, what's going on with Bitcoin this week?
Yeah, Bitcoin is finally, it was battling its all-time highs for a while. Every time it would hit it, it would just get tanked. I mean, tanked and then would come back within hours. So it's not that big of a deal. But finally, we are now sitting above those previous all-time highs. We are currently at 71,000, down 3.4% of the day, but up 6.8% on the week. I was just looking at the 6 months here. We're up 165% on the week, Jay. So, or sorry, on the 6 months. So it's kind of, it's a good time to be in crypto, that's for sure.
All right, let's shift over to ETH. What's going on with ETH?
Yeah, ETH has been above 4K for a little bit here, but we're currently down 4.3% on the day, up just 0.3% on the week. ETH has been lagging a little bit, which is weird because it just had a mega upgrade, which we'll talk about, and a bunch of good things happening fundamentally to Ethereum. But for whatever reason, Solana, which we'll move on to next, has had an absolute beast of a couple days since ETH has launched its blobs, or EIP-4844. Solana took the show. And it is now up 1.49% of the day, but up 27% on the week, currently sitting at $166. Big things happening in Solana, although nothing new. Nothing's launched on Solana. It's all on Ethereum. But this is what happens. I mean, Bitcoin has its big moments, ETF launches, and ETH goes up. ETH has its big moment, and Solana goes up. Who knows what's going on in these markets? It's a little bit wild. But overall, everything is up and to the right. If we look at the total crypto market cap, we're currently sitting at $2.6 trillion. We are down 2.78% on the day, but up 7.26 on the week. I wonder what percent of that is dog with hat, Jay. Must be really moving the total crypto market cap for us because that is the juggernaut of the cycle so far.
We're up like a billion on dog with hat on the week. So
absolute craziness.
All right. So when we step back, Kai, looking at the markets through the past week, what's standing out to you?
Well, no surprise. The same things that happen every single week. We're going to talk about ETF inflows once again. And then we're going to talk about Michael Saylor once again. ETF inflows have surpassed a new all-time high, reaching over a massive, massive amount here, reaching over $1 billion in one day between all the ETFs. That is massive. And coming off the back of just the day before, that was also a new record. So we're continuing to just see crazy adoption through these ETFs. And more banks and more funds are incorporating these ETFs into it. So we've just blown away expectations early on for ETFs. The amounts we're getting right now were the expectations for the entire year. So by the end of 2024, and we've surpassed it in like, I don't know, what are we about? We're basically 2 months now. It got approved on January 14th, I think, 14th or 15th. So we are literally 2 months past, and we are already passing all the expectations we had. So it's absolutely crazy. And at this rate, the ETFs are buying 13,700 Bitcoin every single day at the current price.
Is there going to be any Bitcoin left?
There is not going to be any Bitcoin left, I'll tell you that. I mean, this is something we've been saying for a long time. I'll tell you why there's not going to be any Bitcoin left. It's not just the ETFs. Remember last week, Jay, when I told you that Michael Saylor raised $800 million so you can buy Bitcoin with it? So it's been a week, and guess who is raising money at the tone of $500 million to buy more Bitcoin? Do you know who that is?
I'm like, Michael Saylor?
Michael Saylor. Literally less than a week after raising $800 million, he's raising another $500
million. Jeez.
Nuts. So the amount of Bitcoin that this guy's buying is like, it's not as much as ETFs. The ETFs are bigger than Michael Saylor, but Michael Saylor is one person, one company fighting 10 massive ETFs, some of the biggest financial institutions in the world. So yeah, you're right. There's going to literally be no Bitcoin left. Now, another news, and quite interesting. So the way that Saylor does this, by the way, is he does a private offering of convertible senior notes on the shares of MicroStrategy. I'm not going to get into what that means. But look who else is doing a private offering of convertible senior notes of their shares. Coinbase for $1 billion. What do you think they're going to do with it? Are they going to take a little piece of Michael Saylor? This is pure speculation. I have no idea. Maybe they want to, I don't know, hire a bunch to do some more things. I'm not sure. But Coinbase raising $1 billion right now is quite interesting. I would assume Coinbase would not have done this at all-time highs. Maybe they would have done it in the bear market if they were to do this. But I guess they needed their stock to come back, which like, it took, you know, just the last 2 months, it's gone from, I don't know, basically like in the 40s, 50s to I think it's like $260 today. So now this is when they can do this. So again, I don't know if Coinbase is going to buy Bitcoin with their the notes that they're converting here, but we'll see. Bit of speculation. It'd be pretty cool if they did, because then we'd have two companies doing this. I'm still surprised. It's only Michael Saylor doing this. We'll talk more about that later in the show, but pretty wild to see this. And then the biggest news of them all, screw the ETFs, screw Michael Saylor, screw Coinbase. You know who tweeted about Bitcoin, Jay, just like 2 days ago? Actually, it's not a tweet.
Who?
This is on Instagram. So this is going to the retail people. Campaign copy. Our boy Drake. Jay and I are Canadian. Drake actually, he reshared, or whatever you call it, on Instagram, the story of Michael Saylor talking about Bitcoin on Bloomberg or whatever show it was on, which is the one where Michael Saylor like explains everything he's doing and how he's buying all this Bitcoin by selling his shares. Like, pretty complicated stuff, but like, he's so confident in it. He gives a great explanation of like why Bitcoin is so important, at least on the corporate level. And yeah, Champagne Poppy shared it. I have no idea why, but he's got like 146 million Instagram followers. So I think we're starting to get back into the euphoric stage of this bull market, because retail is definitely hearing about crypto at the moment. So thanks, Drake. We appreciate it. We'll move off Bitcoin for a second, but that's what's going on in the Bitcoin world. Lots of good. Then we have the Ethereum world. Lots of good on the fundamental side in terms of the tech and the improvements, which we'll get to. But on the demand side, on the side of ETFs, which we've talked about a bunch, are supposed to go live in May, maybe not the greatest news coming out. So Eric Balcunas, who's the guy that is the ETF genius who walked us through everything going on at the Bitcoin ETFs over the last year, he's now moving on to helping us and guiding us through the ETH ETF situation. And this deadline is coming in May. He's currently giving it a 35% chance that it gets approved in May. Now,
that's it.
He's saying to make players, yeah, 35%. He's like, look, it's not zero, it's 35. So like, there's still potential. And if it doesn't happen in May, it doesn't mean it won't happen this year. There's still other opportunities. It's just, this is the time where like, they could do the same thing he did with Bitcoin ETFs of approving everyone all at once. They have to make a decision on May 23rd. And their reasoning is pretty easy, or pretty clear, I guess. It's that last time with the Bitcoin ETFs, there was a lot of talk and back and forth with the SEC in terms of the SEC and like BlackRock and a bunch of the others of fixing up their applications, changing things to make this all work. And there has been nothing so far. And we are, what, 2 months away from the potential approval. So it's just been dead silence from the SEC, which is, this is what they used to do every time they declined Bitcoin ETFs in the past. And now they're doing with this with the ETH one. So this is his main reasoning of, doesn't feel like they're willing to put this one through. All of the reasons are there that it should, the court case that, you know, happened before that really enabled Grayscale to pull this thing through should apply to the ETH one. We have ETH futures already approved. So like all the things are in place. But again, that Bitcoin ETF one had to get a vote from the five people at the SEC for whatever reason. And we only won 3-2. I think the same situation is going to happen here with ETH. But with the dead silence, it just doesn't bring as much confidence. So we'll see. There's a chance that like maybe they don't need to do as much back and forth because they already have it figured out on the Bitcoin side of things. So that could be, that's one theory. The other is just like maybe the conversations go parabolic over the next 2 months or like in the last month to figure it all out. They do it sort of last minute because I don't know, maybe they're working on something else right now. That could be the case. Right now it's all speculation, but we're looking at 35%. If you look at the public markets for the predictions markets, it's giving us 31% on the ETH ETF being approved by May 31st. So not looking great per se, but is what it is. We'll see what happens. I'm still hopeful that it will happen.
It's coming. It just doesn't, we just don't know when really is what it comes down to.
It's definitely coming. And then we had some inflation news come out in the US, which obviously this is something we continue to follow because we want interest rates to go lower, part because Jay and I both hold a mortgage and it would be great if those interest rates gone down. But second, because it also means our bags will fly up because when interest rates go down, it means good things for risk assets. Well, we didn't get that quite on this previous CPI number release. We were actually up on CPI. We went from 3.1% to 3.2% in February. So not up a lot. It's 0.1%, but we're hoping for it to go down. But if you can see, I have a chart here up on the screen. It's really just sort of like going up and down, like a small amount over the last couple months. So we're kind of just staying relatively the same when you look at it over a few months' time. So not a massive deal. The one thing we can look at is core CPI continues to go down, though, each and every month. So we went down to 3.8%. It was expected we would go down to 3.7%. So it wasn't as good as what the experts and the analysts said. But they never really get it right. So who really cares? The key is it continues to go down. And for me, I'm completely okay with that. If we look at the expectations by the market for when the Fed is going to lower interest rates, the expectation right now is in June. We have still a pretty high percentage. I don't know if I have that tweet up. No, I don't have it. But I think the market is somewhere around like, I think it's around 60 to 80%. I don't have the exact number up right now that people think that the cut will happen in June. And there will still be 4 interest rate cuts by the end of the year. They're just going to be small. So people are expecting like 0.25% cut kind of thing. But here's the market expectations on this chart here over the next basically 2 years. So until March 2026. And basically it's just down, 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 starting in June all the way until March 26 at 3.4%. I don't see it playing out this way, but if it does, this is also great. We were expecting, and I still kind of do expect this, for it to be bigger drops down. So instead of 0.25, maybe they have to do some more like immediate drops because, I don't know, banks continue to fail. But we'll see if they do that, if they continue to hold this out. I still think that happens, but the market has a little less, whatever you want to call it, bullish, dovish, whatever you want to call it, outlook on this, where it'll be sort of slow and gradual, which honestly, not a bad thing. We've kind of gone parabolic in most risk assets right now. And a lot of people are worried about like a cycle that's going to be too fast, an accelerated cycle. And so a slower decline in the interest rates would actually be kind of good. It might slow us down a little bit, but allow us to just keep grinding upwards long term. So either way, I wouldn't be against that. But either way, I think rates are still continuing to go down. All that matters is the rate of change. Even this chart is super bullish to me because we're at the peak. We're not going up. That's for sure. We're going down. Whether it's fast or slow, honestly, doesn't really matter to me. It's all good news overall. So that's kind of where we're at. That's about all the news we have in terms of Market Watch. Jay, any questions? Any final thoughts, concerns?
It's just so wild to me that the macro situation is what it is while the markets are ripping the way they are. You know, we would have all expected that we would hit all-time highs. By that point, we would have had at least one interest rate cut. Probably a few would have happened before we would think we would get to all-time highs. But we've hit all-time highs before we even have the macro really catch up here. So I don't know, like it's kind of, it makes me bullish in many ways because it's like, oh, the macro is coming and is going to be very favorable for the rest of the year. It looks like based upon everything you're saying, but it also makes me, it gets into that conversation and that question around like when and where does this cycle end and is it going to be accelerated? It feels unpredictable right now.
Yeah. I mean, historically, we're ahead, like you said, but I think it's either the market is starting to figure it out, right? That, oh, we're going to have these cycles. And so I think, especially in crypto, I think people have figured that out. So it's like, okay, well, let's get in ahead of time. And so I think that's probably a big part of it. But I mean, ultimately, who really knows? But yeah, let's see where things go. But I think it's just the market kind of understands what's happening, and they kind of just know, like, they have to lower, right? And so it doesn't matter if it's a steep one, if it's a, you know, kind of a calm lowering over time, like, regardless, they have to lower. And so people are going to put their money in ahead of time. So it makes sense.
And it's all favorable for us in the long run here, because I think it'll all lead to more liquidity coming into the space. So all good. Let's jump to really what should be the biggest story of the week that everybody should be talking about. It's not necessarily the biggest story of the week because Dog with Hat and many other crazy things in crypto seem to steal the spotlight. But let's talk about EIP 484, aka Blobs, which were just introduced this week with a Denken upgrade on Ethereum. Kai, tell us what this is and why this matters.
Yeah, so Blobs are basically a... There's different parts of fees for that layer twos pay to Ethereum. Part of that is settlement fees, execution, and the biggest part is data availability. It's something like 70 or 75% of all the fees that we pay is what L2s have to pay over to the Ethereum L1. It is the reason why fees on L2s are as high as they are. Currently, or previous to this upgrade, you know, sitting anywhere from like 10 cents, 20, 30, 40 cents. I mean, some are even at like $2. I think Starknet was up at like $2 just the other day. And so a lot of this is because of this data availability. This is where like Celestia, EigenDA is coming in to sort of like help with this and compete in that space. What Ethereum's doing to try to keep these L2s to remain on Ethereum and use its data availability is launching what's called Blobs. This is the big upgrade. Basically, it's about 10x cheaper to post your data on Ethereum than it was just yesterday before this went live. So pretty big deal. Now, we have a tweet up here of Jesse Pollock, who's part of Base. He's one of the guys that launched Base at Coinbase. And previous to launching EIP 4844, to transact on Base, it was 31 cents. Okay, so not great. Solana's like, I don't know, 0.0001 cents kind of thing. After they upgraded along with the EIP 4844, it was 0 cents if you looked at the wallet. So if you looked at Coinbase wallet, it literally said 0.00. Now, it wasn't actually free. It's 0.0005, so fractions of a penny. It's just the wallets, the Ethereum-based wallets or EVM wallets, have not updated their UX yet to show how cheap these fees are. So we never had fees this cheap. And so they never even showed that many decimal points. And so the wallets need to actually upgrade to fix this. So it's made a massive reduction in the fees of L2s. Not all layer twos have switched yet. So the L2s themselves have actually upgraded their tech to now use Blobs instead of the previous version. And so you can see we have a tweet up here of the Crypto Fees website. You can see Optimism is below a penny. ZK Sync is 4 cents. Starknet is 7 cents. And that's called, and then someone put a word just says Blobs. And then the line underneath that is everything that's not upgraded yet to Blobs, which like Arbitrum is like 34 cents. Polygon CKVM is 40 cents and so on and so forth. Now, most of them have upgraded. By the time you guys listen to this on Friday, probably every L2 will have upgraded. You can see on this list here that we have of Dune, Arbitrum's now done it, Zora, Mode, Base, ZK Sync, Starknet, Optimism. So basically all the big ones have now done it. It would be crazy not to do it at this point. So what's interesting is you can go to fees.growthepie. Well, you can see it on screen right now. And the moment that this went live yesterday, you can see first it was Starknet who upgraded right off the bat. And just it went from literally $1.50 down to like 0.00001 cent, like cheaper than Solana. So that was huge. And then Optimism followed. You can see the same thing. Arbitrum took a little while here. But you can see them all. Now their fees are just so cheap. So this is a massive upgrade to Ethereum. I think it's going to unlock a lot of new applications and a lot of new use cases on top of L2s. And it's going to create some serious competition with alt L1s. Their whole thing is that they're cheaper. And now we have the same, if not better, on top of layer twos. So, and actually, Borovic.eth, he tweeted and said, ETH L2 base transaction cost is 0.0018 cents. Solana transaction cost is 0.036 cents. So it's actually cheaper to transact on an L2. Now, you're going to see a lot of these bullish tweets right now. This is not super true. It is true in this moment, but this happened when there was only like two L2s using this blob space. So there was basically no demand. So of course, it's very cheap. It's like you launch a new block space and no one's using it. It's not going to cost anything to transact. So what happened here is as all these L2s upgrade and move over and new L2s come online, this cost will go up. So we haven't actually solved scalability. We are not getting 0.00001 fees like it's showing. This isn't a reality, by the end of this week, next week, we will be back up to probably in the pennies again, which is great, you know, way better than we were, but not actually competing with Solana by any means. So keep that in mind. But then also on the flip side of that, because you're seeing a lot of people kind of tweeting that out, being like, hey, I know this and you don't know this. But then there's the other flip side of it is like, look, this is just one upgrade. There are more upgrades coming to EIP 4844. There's supposed to be, I think, another three or four more, which will basically do a 3x on each upgrade on these fees. So we're going to get to below a penny by the time all this is done in the next 1 to 2 years. And especially with something like Ethereum or EigenDA, if people start to use that, then that's going to take things even cheaper. So it's a first step. It's not over yet, but ultimately transactions are essentially going to zero by the time this is all done. So big moves right now. And in fact, Third Web announced that along with Optimism, they are doing a $3 million fund for specific applications and developers on Optimism that are going to pay and cover for users' fees that use that app and for the devs' fees to launch the app. I think this is something we're going to see more frequently. So basically, on Optimism, on certain apps, not all of them, but you're going to be able to use that app without even needing ETH in your wallet. Like, you don't need to pay any gas fee. And that's where I think you have that zero to like 100 moment, right? Like, Solana's great. It's cheaper. But if you want to use a new app and you're new to crypto, you still need to get Solana, even though it's 0.0001 Solana. Like, it's a penny or half a penny or whatever. You still need to like sign up to a centralized exchange or bridge from your PayPal over and like get that SOL onto your wallet. And so like there's still that friction regardless of the cost, you know? And the moment we can make it free, where that friction completely goes away, and you actually don't even need to do that, kind of like what Immutable is already doing as a layer two on Ethereum, that's where you have that massive change in the UX. And so I think free, and this was one of my predictions anyway, was that free L2s, free transactions on L2s is going to be the new meta. We're starting to see the first sort of like hint at this. I got a feeling you'll see Arbitrum and other base, whatever, others come out and compete with this. Bigger funds, maybe they'll make it L2 wide. I'm not sure. We'll see. But I think this is going to be the new competition, is making fees free for all users.
Especially since this is the expectation that every single user in the world will have, that's not the 1 million people that are currently hanging out in crypto and listening to this podcast. You don't go online to the internet and use an app and expect to pay a fee, which is called gas, that you don't even understand what the fuck gas is, and that to be part of your user experience. So that absolutely must be removed. And I think you nailed it, Kai. We're going to see a competition amongst the L2s for who can be the first to make this part of their ecosystem. Immutable has already done that, which is why they're winning so much in gaming. And the rest of the chains, I think, are going to follow up here. I mean, Optimism is saying they're committing to do it for $3 million. They're not committing to do it for everybody. But obviously, if this works, they're going to commit to do it for probably the bigger piece of the pie.
Yeah, I think what happens here is, like, if you think, for those of you listening to the podcast right now, you're probably listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or YouTube, whatever. If you are, by the way, like, share, do all that things. Thanks. But anyway, for you to share or to like or to listen, click play, you didn't have to pay a fee, right? But in the background, there are hosting costs to do that. Like, for you to stream this podcast, there is a cost. It's just the user doesn't pay it. Spotify pays probably millions of dollars in hosting and streaming fees and electricity bills and all the things they need for their servers to allow you to listen to this podcast. Right now, we just, because we're so early, we're like, hey, you guys are going to pay for it all, the users. Mm-hmm. But what's going to happen is apps will just cover this, just like they cover the hosting fees of their site and of their streaming. It's just, it's been too expensive that no app could do it right now. It wouldn't work, right? And now it's cheaper. And so maybe we'll start to see apps doing this. As we continue to get those upgrades I talked about, this will be the norm. And eventually, I would say in 2 years from now, every L2 will be completely free for all users, and all apps or the L2s themselves will just cover this in some manner, just like every business covers hosting fees for every website. So fees, they're about to be abstracted away in the very near term. And so this also, like, for all L1s and stuff, doesn't bode well for them. And so I think this is when we start to see consolidation of mainly Ethereum and L2s, because L2s are the ones that can really make this work. And then I'm not sure how Solana will do this. There is an L2 that just launched in Solana. We'll talk about it later. So maybe they'll do it that way, but it's going to be all free eventually.
All right, let's keep rolling along with the Ethereum news. A couple other big announcements this week. First up, EigenLayer mainnet is just a few weeks away.
Yeah, so they just announced this morning, actually, before we started recording, that they have a plan to now go. Right now, EigenLayer, which is the restaking protocol, is in beta. Crazy that they're in beta. They have, what, $12 billion in TVL or something like that in beta, which is a bit aggressive. But anyway, and so that's why they have capped deposits. So you can't put more deposits in currently as they're in beta. They have a rollout plan now that in the next couple of weeks, EigenLayer will go mainnet and launch, and they will remove their caps, which is massive. We'll see how much demand and flows that EigenLayer can get here. I think it's going to be a lot. They've got a bit of a plan. It's going to take a bit. They're going to launch on a testnet first. They've got a few other things. They're going to launch EigenDA, which is really cool. So basically some early apps for the EigenLayer protocol. And then within the next few weeks, let's say by the end of April at least, mainnet should be live. I would assume the token then is soon to follow afterwards. I'm not sure how long after. They haven't mentioned that, but I know it is an integral part of what they want to do. So it should. I would assume it's coming this year. But huge to see mainnet launch, because we really want to de-risk the restaking narrative. And by going mainnet, taking off the like training wheels, I think this is really going to help. So this is a really big deal for Ethereum.
Love it. Let's go to another announcement out of the Ethereum ecosystem, EtherFi. What's their big announcement this week, Kai?
Yeah, so EtherFi, their points program is ending today, actually, as we record. It should be in a couple hours. So unfortunately, we can't tell you the news on that. But yesterday, they did say they have a big announcement on their plans. So EtherFi, if you guys aren't aware, is the restaking liquidity token, right? So basically, you can put your ETH into EigenLayer, and they'll give you ETH back. And you can, right now, we've been talking about it, so you can farm points for EtherFi, you can farm points for EigenLayer, et cetera. So it's basically the Lido, but for restaking. And what's really cool is they said, hey, we're not actually just going to do staking. We have a bigger plan here. And this is what they've just announced. So they're actually launching three protocols over the next 12 months. The first one is restaking. They already have this. And this was done really, really well. They've brought in billions of dollars. And they're really at the forefront of the restaking tokens. So that's really cool. The next thing, and by the way, that token, the EtherFi token, whatever that's called, is coming very soon as well. The next thing they're launching is called Liquid. And this is basically vaults where you can put your ETH, your EETH, or your wrapped EETH. I know it's a bit ridiculous, but you can put it into these vaults and they will generate yield for you using DeFi protocols with different risk management. So instead of you going using DeFi protocols, you can just throw your tokens into that and they'll do it for you. So you'll get your restaked yield, and then they'll get additional yield on top of that by using Compound and, you know, Curve and all these different ones. So that's really, really cool, just to get extra passive income. And that's coming on the 18th of March. The third thing they're launching is called Cash. And this is the real cool part of this. So you now can restake your ETH. You can put it in these like vaults and they'll generate more yield from it. And now they have Cash, which is connecting these vaults and this any of these assets in your EtherFi balance to a credit card. And basically what happens is you can fund this credit card with any balance that's in your EtherFi account, and you can pay with things in the real world. And so it's all going to be done self-custodial. So it's not like you got to move it to an exchange or something. And so now you have this like sort of way that you can buy this asset. You can earn passive income on it at a risk managed way. And a lot of it is coming from real yield from staking and restaking. And then you can use it to just buy things. And so if you have enough in there that you're generating, you know, $1,000 in yield a month or something, you could buy your groceries or your rent or whatever, just using the yield from Ethereum, all from that credit card. And so you never actually have to touch fiat at that point. So this is really cool. And this is going to be launched within 12 months. Now, they're not exactly sure how they're going to make it work. It's still very early stage, they said, but they've talked about having an L2 for this, so their own L2 to make all this work. But it looks to be very promising, super cool idea. And I think we'll get a bunch of more of these sort of like DeFi-based ecosystems that connect our blockchain assets to the real world so that we can actually use them and pay with things instead of just, I mean, I still probably won't, you know, I'll still spend my fiat, as Michael Saylor was going to tell us in a second. But it's really cool that it is possible, because there are a lot of people that, especially after the cycle, will have like 99% of their net worth in crypto and they need a way to use it.
Well, and we don't even have this story in here, but another thing that happened this week is MasterCard and MetaMask announced a partnership that they're working on a payments card where you could use a MasterCard that is directly connected to your MetaMask wallet and spend directly from there. So we're seeing, and last week we talked about fintech, you know, it all that comes up for me is at the beginning of the episode, you said more banks might fail and you were just throwing that comment out. But like, look at this, like banks, good luck. If you're the head of a bank right now, you're working in a bank, tune up your resume and start trying to get a job in crypto. Okay. Cause
you guys are absolutely screwed that all of this goes and is built out in this way that is much more usable for just day-to-day transactions. We haven't even gotten to that moment yet.
It's so easy. Once you figure this out, it's so easy to understand how this is a 100x better financial system than the one we currently use, right? Instead of an inflationary asset that's controlled by this one old man who sits on the Fed board and tells us how, you know, how much he's going to inflate that or how much he's going to charge us to take out loans against that. Instead of that, you can use this other currency. And also there's going to be costs if you want to change it to another currency, if you want to move it across a border. Some people aren't even able to get it, right? It's like, it's so ridiculous. And then you have this other currency that's just deflationary. It also has just a passive yield that comes from it just because people use it, right? It's borderless. It's permissionless. And then not only that, but you know, people are now finding ways to like pay their employees. And like, we pay our employees on the blockchain because it's just way easier because we have employees all around the world. And so more and more people are taking this better asset, this better currency. They're actually finding ways to move it around the world faster, frictionless, which is great. The problem is it's stuck there. It's not fully stuck, but you can get it out through an exchange, but there's fees, there's time delays, all the stuff. It's more like the TradFi stuff, right? Where it's like, you want to send money from Canada to Europe and it's going to take like 4 days. And you're like, what? I could take a plane with a friggin' luggage of cash and I could get there faster. Why does my digital money take that long to get, you know, across seas? And so it's so obvious that this is a better financial system. We just need to connect it to the real world. I just need to be able to use it. And I think that's what we're seeing a lot of innovation on with EtherFi, as you just said, with MasterCard and MetaMask. And so that's the next big unlock for a lot of people, I think.
I think that it just makes me think that Jack, my son, who's 8 months old, I think he's going to, 20 years from now, he's going to be like, you used banks?
What's up, that is? I wonder if he'll ever use paper money. He'll probably never use paper money. Because by the time he's worried about money, was that 10 years from now, at least?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
I don't know when you get a bank.
When you start teaching your kid about money. I don't know, man. I'm trying to get him to sleep.
No, you're the dad. You tell me.
Right now. I don't know. I'm trying to survive day by day, bro. I'm not thinking about anything when he's 10 years old.
You know what?
Yesterday,
not only will he never
eat a handful of ash out of the our fireplace yesterday. Like, come on, these are the problems I'm dealing with.
Hardcore. You know what? He won't even. It's not that he just won't touch paper money. He probably won't ever touch money because he'll get his AIs to do all the things with his money for him.
Oh boy,
right? That's what he's going to be doing 10 years from now, which is wild. Anyway, we're going too far down this rant.
Maybe he'll be buying his groceries with Dog with Hat because like everybody else right now, meme coin mania is going absolutely insane. We talked about this last week. We can't avoid it. We're talking about it every week now. Look, Dog with Hat launched 3 months ago. It is up 200,000% since its launch 3 months ago. In the last 2 weeks, it's up 300%. In the last month, it's up 750%. It now has a market cap of $3.2 billion. It is top 50 of all cryptocurrencies. Ahead of, it passed Arbitrum this week. It passed Celestia this week. These are real products, real blockchains that have a real value that they're contributing to this ecosystem. And at the same time, we have this meme coin, Dog with Hat, that is just going nuts. So everyone's wondering what the heck is going on. I want to play a clip here to give you an idea of, we're not the only ones that are wondering what's going on. So is Bloomberg TV.
What's been so interesting, of course, is the Bitcoin exuberance. Yes, it solidified it in terms of the dominant player, but still all boats seem to have lifted to a certain degree. I mean, we're starting to talk about meme coins and some of them affiliated with politics. Others, I mean, Dog with Hat for whatever reason, just catching the meme zeitgeist. How are you seeing real desire to be going outside Bitcoin and ETH?
All right. So as the Bloomberg analyst said, the question on all the normies' mind is, what is the reason that Dog with Hat is gone up 200,000% in 3 months? Well, I'll tell you, it's simple. He's wearing a hat and the hat is always on. It stays on. Doesn't matter what this dog does. This dog goes for a run. That hat is on. It is reliable. Token go up to the moon. No, seriously, look, meme coins, they don't make any sense, but they are a big part of internet culture. Memes are a massive part of internet culture. And right now, early in cycles, this happens every cycle, meme coins are usually the ones
they catch an early pump and cycles. When this happens, it's not about fundamentals, it's about pumpamentals. And look, Dog With Hat has captured the entire world by storm.
That imagine telling them that Bloomberg analyst that the reason is because literally just because it's wearing a hat.
What do you think she would
say? Here's some pumpamentals behind this. So this week, a crypto Twitter influencer, Ansem, started a fundraise to raise $650,000 to buy the space, advertising space on the Vegas Sphere for 1 week. They raised this in 5 days. In 5 days, they raised $650,000. This is the power of meme coins and of internet strangers and internet culture. Couldn't do this in the regular world. Like, to raise $650,000 from millions of random people would not happen this easily. So there you go. So now we're going to see the Dog With Hat. I don't know when they're going to be on the Sphere, but you're going to see the Dog With Hat on the Sphere in Vegas. You can bet that's going to bring a ton of marketing to Dog With Hat. People are going to be posting photos of it. People are going to be seeing it. And look, that's what makes this stuff go. More people see Dog With Hat, more people talk about it. Bloomberg talks about it, and the token continues to go up. Look, I think the main question here is everybody gets a lot of FOMO during moments like this. Kai, are you going to redistribute capital to Dog With Hat?
Am I going to absolutely not. Kudos to all the people that did, but like, not now, that's for sure. If you got in early, great, that's cool. But these are I'm not even going to say top signals. I don't care. But it probably continues to do well. I don't care. I'm just different than some others. But I hold Wen, which is a cat. And I hate cats, but I continue to hold.
But does he have a hat?
Whatever. No hat. The cat does not have a hat, unfortunately.
Oh,
yes. What about these ones, though? What are these? These are hilarious.
Okay, so then there's this whole other sort of new meme coin trend that's happening right now over on Solana. There's been a whole bunch of new meme coins that have dropped that the art looks like it's drawn on like Microsoft Paint from like 1995. And they all are based upon a lot of famous politicians or famous artists, but like with misspelling their name. So we got Barack Obama, we got Droke instead of Drake, we got Donald Trump instead of Donald Trump, we got Geo Bowden, we got Olin Mosk. And if you can see, if you guys are watching us on YouTube, you can see a bunch of these images. We also had a Taylor Swift for Taylor Swift. And look, these meme coins are taking the internet, the crypto Twitter by storm. Like, everybody is now jumping in on these meme coins. And look, it's easy to sit on the outside and say this stuff looks stupid. But again, memes like this represent culture, and culture is a big part of the internet. And the way that we are using crypto is all about connecting a lot of people in a digital way that we could not connect them before to create capital formation. And so people are jumping behind these.
It's expressing culture in financial terms, which is something we've never been able to do. I saw a good take the other day, and it was like, look, it's pretty clear that anything that gets some sort of cultural relevance is going to be tokenized. And whether it's tokenized in like a fundamental way, or it's just like obviously tokenizing Donald Trump or whatever, like, it's not connected to Donald Trump, but it is sort of, right? It's connected to the culture side of it. And so, like, I guarantee you during this presidential election, as Donald Trump outperforms Joe Biden or vice versa, the tokens will outperform, right? It's going to be like almost like this predictions market that's liquid. Like, it's very weird and it's something completely new, but I'm here for it. I think it's only going to continue to get weirder. And so you need to just sit here and pay attention, try to figure out what the heck's going on, because something brand new to the world is coming from this. I don't know what it is, but something's happening here, and it's around tokenizing culture. It's funny, we always talked about that a couple of years ago on like social tokens. I guess this is the social token, just in a very weird form.
Yeah, we always thought the social tokens would take the form of existing communities built using a token to connect their community for governance or for a form of capital formation. So you could imagine like our favorite football team doing that, or our favorite basketball team doing that, but that hasn't really taken off. But these have. Not to be outdone, Elon Musk had to get in on the party this week, and he, live on stage at a Tesla event, said that Tesla will enable Doge payments at some point, Dogecoin to the moon. So obviously Elon being Elon couldn't help himself. And I mean, look, Elon gets that blockchain is better for payment rails, so all respect to him for that. But at the same time, like,
man, stop pumping Dogecoin. Your impact, your influence is too large for you to say things like that. Have a little bit more responsibility. Last up before we jump off meme coins, there was a great take from Kobe that I just want to read, and then Kai would love to hear your thoughts. So Kobe, crypto Twitter influencer, if you don't know, go ahead and follow him. He's great. He says, one thing that I will add is that meme coins seem to be one of the last remaining opportunities in crypto for a normal person to go from zero to respectable money in a short period of time. And this is the sole reason I don't feel ivory tower or judgy about it. It seems like exactly what I would be doing right now if I were starting out. For me, we had fair access to Bitcoin and Ethereum, etc. Now those type of opportunities are privatized and competitive, but I also recognize that it's quite sad that that is the case and hope it doesn't stay that way. We'll see what I can do.
So I wouldn't say it's sad. Like, it's not like 200,000x is like supposed to happen all the time for everyone. Like, you were early to Bitcoin, Ethereum, a whole new industry and asset class. That's great. Doesn't mean we need to have that happening every day, like all the time. So like, I don't know about that, but I do agree. It's almost impossible to get those kind of returns in like a normal project now. Like, if you launch a DEX, you're not going to get 200,000% gains in it because there are already existing DEX with tokens that you can value and compare on, right? So like, it's harder for these things to get way overvalued and just like out of control valuations, because every other project that exists that's not completely net new has some sort of fundamental way to value it. You launch a new blockchain, well, you can compare it to all the other ones, right? And so it doesn't get so crazily out of control. Whereas meme coin has no fundamentals and nothing really to compare it to other than other meme coins. But like, how do you value that, right? And so these things can just like, if they catch it and the meme lives on, as we just saw with Dog with Hat, it can do it, right? It can still do these things. And so, and I think those opportunities will continue. Doesn't mean like, hey, if you're late to the party and you've got just a little bit of money, doesn't mean you should go all in on that, because then you're just going to miss, like, the chance of you getting that is very slim. And so like, then you're just going to miss the bull market in general, which is ridiculous, because you could still easily 5x right now doing the most basic thing. And so like, to not take that opportunity is pretty crazy in my mind. But definitely if you're so late to this and you want to swing for the fences, then it definitely doesn't hurt to put a certain percentage of your portfolio in these things and just like hope something goes. But don't go all in.
I think you make a great point around expectations, right? The danger here is it all, and I feel like I broke a record saying this, but like, if you're sitting there and you're expecting 10x in a few months, reframe your expectations, because that is the type of expectation that will lead you to lose most of your money.
Yeah.
Look, maybe you got lucky and you picked Dog with Hat. Maybe you picked one of the other hundreds of meme coins that have launched in the last 6 months that are now fucking worth zero. So, you know that there's a massive risk in this. And maybe it's because I'm a dad now, but play the safe bet would be my view. Anyways, let's go on to the next story. We got some unlocks coming up in the next week. Token unlocks are an important thing to look at that I think not enough people in the space spend time looking at this. I've got Arbitrum up on the screen here, and they have a token unlock coming up in the next, it's actually in 2 days, so it'll be 1 day from when you guys are listening to this. There will be 1.1 billion ARB tokens unlocked in 2 days. Kai.
Yeah, it's going to happen. It's almost doubling its current circulating supply. And for those that understand token unlocks, this is basically before they launch a token, there are a bunch of investors and the team that get an allocation of the tokens, but they're not allowed to get their tokens as soon as it launches to the public, right? That wouldn't be fair because they hold such a massive percentage of the total tokens, so they could just crash the price. And so what they do to make it more fair is they launch to the community, and then at some point there's sort of a cliff where all of a sudden, okay, now we're going to distribute a bunch of tokens to the team, to those previous investors, and then it like slowly unlocks over time after that. And the way that Arbitrum was set up though is starting on the 16th, there's just a massive cliff. So it's not just a little one, it's literally almost doubling the entire supply to the team and to the investors. And so the scary part here is these people have invested in this, you know, years ago, and they're finally getting access to their liquidity. What do you think they're going to do, right? Like, Arbitrum is up 100x or whatever it is since whenever they invested in. So many of them are likely going to take profits. Doesn't mean they all will. Some will continue to hold. They want governance. They want to use, I don't know, maybe Arbitrum's going to have some staking in the future. Like, I don't think it's just all going to sell. So they're not going to dump half the supply, obviously. I think these people invest in this. They still believe in it. We're early in a bull market, so there's still a ways to go. But In a bear market, this would completely tank the price by 20, 30, 40%. I don't think that happens here. We've had a lot of people on our Discord asking about this. If you have double the supply come onto the market in one day, like what do you think is going to happen? You need a lot of demand to sort of keep that price at bay, right? Because you can expect a certain percent of these people are going to sell. How many? Obviously, we don't know. My assumption here is that I think there's probably enough demand, especially because EIP 4844 just went live. So there's sort of a narrative in L2 tokens right now. And so I think that the market will likely absorb a lot of this. And if Arbitrum dips, I think it's short-lived. I don't think it has this big like 40% dip and drains out or whatever. Unless the market has a pullback right now or in the next coming days, then maybe it goes back further than others. But we'll see if that happens. But also if we continue on the path we're on, I don't think it actually has a massive dip, but we'll see what happens. What's interesting is the market cap of Arbitrum is like $3 billion right now. Literally in one day, it's going to go up to almost $6 billion. As long as like the price stays the same, it just immediately changes to $6 billion. What's kind of an interesting dynamic to that is Arbitrum and Optimism, the two biggest L2s, have kind of stayed similar market caps all the time. As one gets sort of like overvalued versus the other, that one sort of catches up. And so I do wonder if the opposite happens here. And like Arbitrum all of a sudden has a $6 billion market cap. And then a bunch of the retail who's coming into the space right now looks and goes, and they don't know about token unlocks. They don't know about fully diluted valuations where that's not changing here. It's just the market cap. And so they look and they go, oh, Optimism looks very undervalued in terms of market cap versus Arbitrum, right? And so all of a sudden they start bidding up OP. I could see that happening. I actually thought about putting on a long on OP 2 days ago before EIP 4844. Because of these two combinations. So anyway, don't know exactly what's going to happen. That's just something I've been sort of speculating on and thinking about, but we'll see. The reason I wanted to bring this up now is like, keep an eye on this. This is going to be a good lesson of what's going to happen because there's a lot of projects that have massive token unlocks like this. Most of them, if they've raised in this previous bear market, don't happen until like 2 years from now, which the problem with that is at some point when the demand stops, when new people stop coming into the space, and so there's no new demand, and there's a bunch of new supply coming in the market, that's when you have tokens that go down 90, 95%. That's why most tokens in crypto get wrecked in a bear market. They go down 95, 98%. The Solanas of the world last cycle, the L2 tokens weren't really launched, but a lot of the apps like Uniswap, et cetera, they just got completely beat up. And it's because all their unlocks happen when there's no demand. This one is not that big of a deal because we still have tons of new people coming in. We just surpassed all-time highs. But this is one of the reasons why we have cycles in crypto. Part of it is liquidity, which I always talk about. The other part is everyone raises within like 1 year. And then it's like 2 years, 3 years after that is when all their tokens unlock to their investors. And so like the supply of tokens just massively increases all at once. And there's just not enough demand for that. And so prices have no choice but to go down. And so it's interesting because you have the liquidity cycle plus this like supply cycle, this unlock cycle that all happens at the same time. And I think that's a big reason why crypto outperforms to the downside, right? Like it goes down so much versus like a stock, which doesn't have this dynamic. So anyway, it's why I think we'll have a similar cycle as we've had, because again, all these raises, everyone's launching their tokens right now. And so 2 years from now, all those unlocks happen. So something to be aware of why the bear market's going to happen and why you want to get out of a lot of these tokens. So make sure you look at token unlocks. It's a key thing.
All right, time to airdrop them like it's hot, our weekly airdrop segment, to make sure you're on top of all the upcoming airdrops that you can take advantage of and make some free money. First up, we've got Tensor. Kai, Tensor, one of the biggest marketplaces for Solana NFTs. What's going on with them?
Tensor is a beast. It's kind of like, for if you haven't used it, it's like the Blur, but on the Solana ecosystem. They've done an incredible job. They've built an amazing platform. It is actually really, really good. This is one that we mentioned in our Solana airdrop guide months ago that you can farm. Finally, they've announced their token. It's TNSR. We don't know a ton of details about it, but it is going to be live soon, and it will be just a governance token for now. So everyone who's been collecting points, you're about to get rewarded. So you can already check and see if you're eligible to claim, but you can't actually mint the tokens yet. So don't click on any fake links, but that's going to be a big one. I think Tensor is going to continue to be massive. The other one that's launching, or just launched actually, is Avo, which is one that we use a little bit to actually predict the prices of pre-launch tokens, so tokens that are coming out. I would actually bet if you go to Avo, you could now see the predictions for Tensor. I haven't looked yet, but I bet you could. Anyway, they just launched their token and it's done quite well. It's currently sitting at a $340 million market cap, sitting at $3. So anyone who got that airdrop, congrats to you. It's always nice to get some free money.
Next up, we've got Grass. Grass is the first L2 data rollup on Solana, and they've been capturing a lot of attention on their end from A, being an L2 on Solana. That doesn't exist yet, so everyone's excited about that. What does that mean? And also, they seem to be really leaning into AI as well. You can farm their token right now. I'm a little bit wary of this. Kai, I know you are as well. What's your take?
Yeah, I know nothing about Grass. I've looked nothing into them. When you showed me this tweet or whoever put it in our Discord, I read the tweet and I was just like, this seems pretty scammy. It says, ladies and gentlemen, we're proud to announce Grass is the first ever layer 2 data rollup. There's a couple buzzwords, layer 2, data. We're preparing to change AI forever with an L2 that can process 1 million transactions per second and settle them on Solana. And then, of course, they're doing an airdrop. A lot of the key buzzwords and narratives, AI, data availability, layer 2s, 1 million transactions per second. It just seems a bit, maybe their marketers just, you know, trying to get all those buzzwords in. But if I had to guess of one layer 2 project that's going to rug everyone, right now it's Grass. And honestly, I know nothing about the team and I know nothing about the project. So like, I could be completely wrong. So don't actually like take this as real advice. I don't really like when people tweet things with just every buzzword all in one. It's a bit much.
All right, last airdrop of the week to mention is Magic Eden. If you have ever traded a NFT on Ethereum, Magic Eden is going to reward you for doing so. So you can expect a diamond drop from Magic Eden. And eventually, these diamonds will turn into tokens when Magic Eden launches their token, which is called NFT, and is connected to their governance plans to decentralize their protocol. But look, lots of our listeners, I'm sure you guys have traded, bought or sold NFTs on Ethereum since 2017. And if you have, make sure you check out if you are eligible for some diamonds. All right. Agree, disagree, favorite segment every week where we bring up some tweets and some comments from our community and tell you whether we agree or disagree with them. First up, from Fred Federico, aka Fred, in our community, he says, so stressed thinking about an accelerated cycle. What do you think about the potential for an accelerated cycle? Will it top this year?
Now, this is starting to pick up as a narrative. And the reason it's picking up is we have technically accelerated the cycle so far. We have never been above all-time highs in Bitcoin anyway, pre-halving. It always comes after the fact and usually a few months after the fact. And we're there a few months before. So that's quite interesting. Obviously, it's happening because of the ETFs. We've talked about that. And so people are expecting that, well, because we're so far ahead, you know, we're going to end much sooner. And, you know, there's a percent chance that this happens. I definitely don't want to say it can't happen. There's no doubt. I think this is people who get too stuck on past cycles. They're like, well, if we're this far ahead, then, you know, we're definitely going to be a 3.5x because that's what we got last cycle. And well, we're already this far. So like, you got to kind of just like play it as it goes. You can't, you know, you might have had a theory 6 months ago, 9 months ago, and it has to change because of what we're seeing with the Bitcoin ETFs. I don't think we continue down this path of up only. We're going to get a pullback. In terms of like when you get to the euphoric stage of a bull market, we're not there because we haven't had any pullbacks really. In a typical cycle, we do have sort of like long stretched out periods in the middle of it where we don't have any pullbacks for an extended period of time. And then as you get near the top, those pullbacks happen very frequently. And we're not at the stage yet. So I got a feeling like we're going to cool off at some point and then we'll start to go back up. So like, I don't really see the accelerated cycle happening. I just think it's just not playing out the exact same as before. And that's fine. Maybe we have a double top, people have said, or maybe we just go much higher than people are thinking. The stage is set for that. I actually think more about, well, what if we don't get a proper cycle, the proper pullback like we've had, and instead we not super cycle per se, but this is the one cycle where people are not going to, like, they don't have to leave because we have stablecoins, which is just making a lot of people's lives better. They're just going to use them. If we get real apps, we still are not at the point where we have a bunch of apps that, like, everyone's using in the world. So, like, we're not there. And so maybe I'm one cycle too early on saying this. It's going to have to depend on what happens over the next year. If gaming does launch and we get some real games that pick up adoption, which is a prediction of ours as well, then again, there's no reason for people to leave. They're going to play the games not because they're speculating, but because they want to play a game. And Web3 just, you know, powers it to make it better. And so if that happens, like, well, you've got a ton of fees still happening, which means you've got passive income if you hold ETH and you stake it. So it's like, or Solana, whichever one this is on. So like, I don't know. There's a chance that either happens, but I think it's just going to be on schedule as normal, to be completely honest. But let's see. We got to continue to just watch and see how things play out. I don't get the feeling that we're like getting very toppy and this is almost done. As much as it's like, whoa, a lot has happened, it's really not that much in the grand scheme of things yet. When Dog With Hat goes on the Sphere in Vegas, then I'll start to be thinking it.
Okay, let's go to the next one. The Wolf of All Streets says, bull markets are far more stressful than bear markets. It's not even close. In a bear market, there are almost no decisions to be made. And if you have any level of conviction, you just buy and wait for things to come back. In a bull market, you are forced into active decision making. You're forced into an active decision making situation where you are always living in fear that your portfolio has topped and you are missing out on the gains. Reality is that you should dollar cost average out in the same way that you dollar cost average in. Get used to taking profit, even if it does not end up being the top.
Yeah, when I originally read this, I was like, yes, I agree. And then I sat back and thought, you know what? Actually, my stress levels in terms of this bull market is way less than the bear market. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, the main reason is like I was prepared for this bull market. I knew it was coming. We had been calling it for a while. I've been allocating throughout the bear market. So like I got a meaningful position. I have a strategy that I feel really good about. And then also like bull markets can be very stressful because there's a million narratives and a million tokens and like you're seeing people making all this money. And I wrote a lot over the bear market, if you saw in our pro reports, of like how to manage those emotions. And so I've been doing those things and not letting FOMO get the best of me, not letting greed get the best of me. I'm not making a lot of trades. I'm kind of just sitting back and letting this whole thing play out. And so this is the first, like last cycle, I was definitely stressed. I was jumping around. I had no idea what I was doing. I was buying all these different tokens and like, you know, trying to catch the next thing. This time I'm not doing any of that. And I just have no stress really on this. I just smile every day because I mean, it keeps going up. So why wouldn't I smile? So I actually feel a lot less stressed this bull market. The bear market I did, but that's because I had a lot of capital in the market. I wasn't prepared. I didn't take profits. And also like we'd started two businesses in the industry. So I was like, okay, this kind of sucks. And so actually the bear market felt a little bit more stressful. I think if you have a strategy and you know how to keep and stick to that strategy, you know how to manage your emotions, bull market is a bit of a breeze, at least for me this time. And I wrote a lot last year to help everyone do the same. And so if you've been following, hopefully you feel the same, but I know there are many who are not, that's for sure.
Especially yeah, I think this comes down to
things that I buy now.
Yeah, that's what I think this comes down to. Are you allocated or are you not? If you were allocating during the bear market, then bull markets are not stressful because you're already in and you're seeing tremendous gains. And all you're doing is sitting back and going like refreshing the app every minute to see what your crypto worth is valued at now, right? That's right. Very different than if you haven't allocated. And that's where the stress comes in, is a lot of people get very FOMO feeling. And when you have FOMO feeling during a bull market, you feel like you need to allocate. Either you've allocated and you want to allocate more, and maybe that gets you leverage, which is very stressful, or you haven't allocated and you're new to the space and now you're trying to figure out what you should allocate, and it's a very stressful time to allocate. The important thing is, no matter what you do, just have a plan. I mean, there's a pro report that just came out this morning where Kyle breaks down his crypto portfolio updated for you guys. Go read that. Check out his portfolio. And you'll get an idea of what your plan should be and what you should be allocating.
If you bought in the bear, you can sell way before the top and you're still taking a 5, 10X. Like you feel good about it, you know? But if you're just buying now, it's like, shit, I got to kind of wait for the top to get my, you know, couple X here. And that's where it gets a lot more stressful.
All right. Next up, Key Young Jew says, been in this industry for 7 years and I'm proud to still be here. Many short-term minded people have failed to survive. You should be proud of yourself for enduring all the shit that happened until BTC reached the previous all-time high. Happy all-time high, Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, we celebrate it, but I feel like it's always good to continue to celebrate it. I know a bunch of our listeners have been with us through the entire bear. We launched at the like beginning of the bear market, I would say. Yeah, and so for those that have been around for a while, the fact that you stayed through this, you know, I was thinking about this the other day and like, 99% of people left, maybe 95% of the cycle, I would say, right? Like most users left, a lot of developers left, went over to AI, a lot of investors left. If we look, I mean, we run a marketing agency, so we see the metrics on the social side of how many views our videos and some of our clients' videos, how much less they got through that bear market. it's a significant amount of people left. And so if you were one of the ones that stayed, that was not easy. You had FTX collapse in front of our eyes, billions of dollars. You had multiple companies collapse. Many of us probably lost money in those. Prices went down, I think 80% it was, in the best assets and way more than that. The others, like, if you stayed and either kept building, kept buying, kept like learning, like, kudos to you. It's not an easy thing to do. You're a 5%er, you know? It is pretty wild. So you got to give yourself kudos for that for sure.
Yeah, super proud of everybody that's listening and has been listening this whole time. You should be very proud of yourself, even if nobody in your life, your friends or your family have a fucking clue what you're doing. We're proud of you. So well done. Okay, next up, Michael Saylor and his disconnected self. Love him and hate him, that's for sure. Saylor went on TV this week. I think he was on CNBC. And he said that he basically called everyone who uses fiat poor. What a Chad.
Yeah, I mean, like, the question came out was like, you're going to sell at some point. Like, everyone's got to sell. And he goes, into what? Fiat? And he basically was like, you know who holds fiat? The poor. And it's just like, I actually was like, whoa, did you really just say that on national TV? Like, he makes a point. Like, the richest people in the world own assets. That is how you get rich. So, like, I get what he's saying. He's just, like, so ridiculous at how he delivers it. He's so, I say I'm a very direct person, but he is just on a whole nother level. Oh, yeah. And so I agree. If you want to get rich, you need to not hold fiat for the most part. I just don't agree with his delivery.
Delivery?
Yeah.
At the same time, another tweet from Alexander Leishman, he says, if you're the CEO of a company with a robust treasury and you're not paying attention to what Saylor is doing, you are asleep at the wheel.
Yeah, this I agree 100%. I saw a tweet the other day. I forget who said it, but they were like, one of the greatest trades of all time was The Big Short. You know, there's a movie by it. We all know it. That was Michael Burry. He put $1 billion to short the real estate market in 2017. That goes down as one of the best ever. Michael Saylor has now put $4 billion. And actually, it's probably close to five now because he just took out $800 million last week and bought Bitcoin with it. And now he's taking another $500 million. It was actually probably over $5 billion. $5 billion by this. 5X as big as one of the greatest trades of all time. And like, I think everyone listening to this is like, he's probably going to be very right on this. And he's doing it in a way where he's not actually taking his money and doing it, right? He's taking out loans where he pays basically no interest for like 10 years. He basically can't get liquidated the way that he set this up. It's just, it's an incredible system. Like the way that he's financially constructed this is actually incredible. And I don't know why no one else is doing this. It's not an easy thing to do and figure out, but there are accountants and whoever else you need to like figure this stuff out. And so as long as you have capital, there's no reason why you wouldn't do this. I mean, I guess some people just don't have the balls that Michael Saylor has, obviously, but he is literally currently undergoing one of the greatest trades of all time, and he will be in history books if this works out.
I wonder how many are doing this and we just don't know it because either they're buying the ETF because they're an institution and they can't actually put Bitcoin on their balance sheet in an easy way. So the ETF is finally allowing them to do that and we don't know that they're doing it. Or they're doing it and they're just not celebrating it because they're not Bitcoin maxis like Michael Saylor. And if you're the head of a public company, do you really want to make it public information that you're behind Bitcoin
when you would have right? It's public companies.
You can't disclose it, but you don't have to market it, right? There's a difference. You don't have to go on national TV and sell it.
Anything that comes out of anything to do with Bitcoin, someone in the Bitcoin world finds it, puts it out on Twitter, and it goes viral. So people might be doing it now. They just haven't announced it because you have to, you know, it's every quarter they do their earnings season. So like maybe that's the case.
Maybe next quarter there's a whole bunch of
Some point there is going to be a quarter where this happens, right? Like last cycle, it was Michael Saylor and then nothing for a while. And then all of a sudden Tesla and who was the other ones? Cash App, I believe, whatever Dorsey's company is. Block, yeah. And a few others did it. And so that'll happen again. But that happened when Bitcoin was at like 40K, I think is when Tesla announced they bought. So double the previous all-time highs. So we're probably not there at that part yet of the cycle.
Speaking of big moments, Will Clement says, with BTC now at all-time highs, the headline gap risk to the upside is tremendous for anyone not allocated. Only need one high-profile billionaire or one sovereign wealth fund to announce even a minor allocation, and this
thing likely melts up, similar to Tesla last cycle.
Exactly the point I was just making is,
yeah,
it's funny. We talk about institutions being the smart money, but they often still buy the top. Tesla, I mean, didn't buy the very top, but they bought at 40K instead of, you know, 69. Michael Saylor, though, bought at, I think, like, he started buying at 8K Bitcoin. And so, like, he was the one bright guy that did it. But then you had Tesla, all the companies we just talked about, you had El Salvador, all of them came at the top when the excitement came. Because that's when people start to look at it and they're like, oh, this is a great idea. Maybe it'll keep going up. So even institutions buy the top. And the same thing is going to happen here, right? Someone soon that's big, whether it's a billionaire or a big company or a sovereign wealth fund, is either buying or is going to buy soon and going to announce it soon. And that is going to be the catalyst that continues to take Bitcoin from whatever it's at now, 71,000 to 100,000, 200,000, right? It's going to be these big, big, big wealthy funds in wealthy countries or wealthy people. And so we're still waiting for that to happen. It's still pretty quiet out there, which is why I say I don't think we're quite at the accelerated super cycle, because we just, a lot of things haven't happened yet that always happen in the cycle. So we're still waiting.
Good times all around. Good things to come. What a week. We actually, during mid-episode, Kyle and I had to make some decisions to cut some of this news. So there is just way too much going on in the space, but it is all good, baby, baby. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. I hope you guys are feeling good about where you're allocated. Look, if you're feeling FOMO, if you're feeling not the negative vibes, but the scary vibes of maybe being not taking advantage of this cycle or not feeling like you're in it, take a deep breath. If you have any allocation, you're better than most. If you don't have allocation and you're new to this space and you want to figure out what to do, join our Discord. Throw a message in our Discord. We are all active there. We are here to help you guys. Feel free to comment on our podcast if you're listening on YouTube, or subscribe to our newsletter if you're not already subscribed. We make sure to give you guys as much information as we can to give you the confidence to feel good about your investments and also to truly understand this on-chain world that is in never-ending transformation. We got your back, you know? We're homies, homies for life. Thanks for listening in, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to Web3 Academy, your one trusted source to capitalize on the next big phase of the internet. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and subscribe or follow so that you don't miss the next one. While you're at it, there's a link in the description for our free newsletter where we provide timely and relevant Web3 insights so you can confidently build and invest in Web3. Make sure to subscribe today. One final note. This podcast is for educational purposes only, and nothing we say is financial advice. Crypto and Web3 are risky, and you should never invest more than you're willing to lose. Thank you, friends, and see you in the next one.